Before we suspected it was there, the noose had tightened around our necks. The investigation of the partially assembled missile defenses along the Vista Street bunker only took a day. The men in charge concluded that the rocket launchers were complex pieces of machinery that required routine maintenance after every battle. Maintenance that generally required a minimum of 4 days to complete. With the Avatari attacking every 3 days, finding a good time to disassemble and repair the batteries was pretty much out of the question. The investigators also discovered that the order to work on the batteries had come from Brigadier General Samuel Hauer, the tough little weasel who was number two in the Army chain of command. As Hauer was the one who called for the investigation in the first place, the matter was dropped. Hauer resigned his commission the following day. I didn't allow myself to worry too much about incompetent leadership, as I fell into the rhythm of life without the protection of Vista Street. Within hours of the battle, the brass placed all personnel on a new duty schedule. We had a 12-hour work detail, followed by a 4-hour shift in which we could do whatever we liked, then an 8-hour sleep period. I spent my first work detail driving into the forest with Phillips, Tomer, and 8 other men looking for survivors. I did not think we would find anyone with a pulse, but I was wrong. Phillips and Tomer had taken turns loading survivors into jeeps and chauffeuring them back to town, while the rest of us stayed back to smart tag the dead. Smart tagging meant painting a laser beacon onto the bodies. So there we were, bright ion curtain light, dissolving anything even resembling a shadow under the thick canopy of trees. I was cold and wishing I had worn my armor, bad shoulder or no, and now Phillips and Tomer had joined me.
There are a lot more humans and mutters out here.
I heard the mutters evaporate after you kill them.
Yeah, I heard that too.
How many you think we've tagged so far, sir?
6 of them down here. Hey, there's barbecued brain poking out of this guy's skull.
Okay, we got him. Where now?
Let's head over the rise.
Are you guys heading into town after this?
After this detail? Man, I want to get good and drunk.
How about you, Harris?
I'm ready to tie on a good one.
We crested the rise, and the massacre was suddenly laid out before us. Fatigue-clad bodies carpeted the ground ahead of us, and every last one of them had muddy white hair and brown eyes wide open and startled. They lay in intricate patterns, like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle poured out of a box.
Lord.
Shit. There must be a million of them down there.
I surveyed the scene. It was absolutely still.
There's a live one!
Tomer pointed along the ridge that surrounded the clearing. There, sitting on the ridge, was an old soldier curled around an M27. He cradled it to his chest and rocked back and forth.
Phillips, go get the jeep. We'd better run this guy back to town.
Tomer and I stepped over bodies and made our way around the rim of the clearing. When we came to the bottom of his hill, the old man turned and stared down at us.
The Liberator. All these men die, and the spigot Liberator makes it out alive.
It was Glenn Benson, the Liberator-hating old man who sat next to me on that flight to Mars.
What is your name, Corporal?
Benson. Corporal Glenn Benson.
Are you hurt?
Just my leg.
We'll take you into town.
Phillips came driving over the ridge, his jeep bouncing as it cleared ruts in the ground. He worked a miracle, managing to drive right up to us without running over any bodies.
Tomer, why don't you drive Corporal Benson back to town?
I'm staying here with my platoon.
You're doing what with who? Listen here, you old specker. We ain't got time to argue. We have a war to fight.
These men died!
Damn speckin' right they died. That's why they got all them holes in them.
I belong with my platoon!
You do? You're planning on killing yourself? Or are you just gonna sit around crying and wait for the mutters to come back?
I thought Benson would either shoot Phillips or put a bullet in his own fool head. Instead, he climbed to his feet. Tomer grabbed him by the shoulder and helped him walk to the jeep.
Can I drive the old bastard in?
Doesn't matter to me.
Tomer arranged Benson in the back of the jeep. Then they drove away.
Oh, what an asshole.
Which one?
Freeman gave me exactly 24 hours to rest up from the battle. The next day, he called early enough to wake me from bed.
How soon can you be down to the Army airfield?
I'm doing well, thanks. And how are you? Give me an hour.
30 minutes. Bring full armor.
What's happening in 30 minutes?
We leave in 30 minutes.
I met Freeman at the airfield. Behind him, a helicopter was powering up. What are we doing today?
Dr. Sweetwater wants us to run some experiments.
Experiments? We're not going back to those mines, are we?
No. We're going out to the Avatari landing zone.
In the forest?
Yes.
You planning on parachuting down? The trees around those spheres are too thick to land.
Not anymore. They moved them closer to town.
Against my better judgment, I climbed in the helicopter. Besides our pilot, we were the only ones along for the ride. The chopper lifted off and flew across the western edge of town.
So you've been out here running errands for the science lab. I never knew you were so altruistic.
Freeman, who was not much for conversation, gave me a go-spec-yourself glare.
You know this is going to flush your macho, I-only-care-about-myself reputation down the shitter once and for all. From here on out, people are going to expect you to stop for children in crosswalks and help little old ladies cross the street.
How much are they paying you, Harris? Last I heard, they pay lieutenants $2,500 per month.
I get a combat bonus.
$500 per month?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, if we survive this, I get a $1.5 billion payday.
That's a lot of money. We're still partners, right? Okay, just remember my birthday.
You're a clone. You weren't born.
I was born. I just wasn't conceived. Kinda like Jesus.
The spheres were in a large clearing just a few miles out of town. I had passed through this very clearing my first day on New Copenhagen, on my way back to town with Phillips and the remaining members of his fire team. There had been a tall radio tower in the center of the clearing, but the structure now lay twisted along the ground, like the skeleton of a 1,000-foot snake. 12 Avatari light spheres stood in a line across the clearing.
How long have they been here?
They moved last night.
The aliens moved the spheres here after the attack?
Dead bodies littered the floor of the clearing. Old soldiers, now 24 hours gone. I saw M27s and pistols in the mud. Off along one edge of the clearing was a pile of crates and equipment. Freeman must have been busy all morning. The pile included a full-sized steam shovel.
What is that for?
An experiment.
Freeman began the experiment by having me toss a grenade into a sphere. The grenade exploded. The sphere seemed untouched. When we found shrapnel from the grenade, it was already coated with tachyons. Freeman recorded everything as I fired lasers from all across the light spectrum into the sphere. The laser color made no difference. They all dissolved in the light of the spheres. He planted several chemical bombs around the spheres. The bombs had no effect. The highlight of the day came when Freeman climbed into the steam shovel and dumped a 2-ton load of dirt on the spheres.
What the hell are you trying to do?
Bury it!
He poured a second load of dirt over the sphere.
Bury it? You think you can make it go away by burying it?
The uselessness of burying the sphere became apparent as the sphere rose to the top of the dirt like a bubble rising to the surface of water. In all, the day seemed rather laughable.
Hey, got a fire hydrant? Maybe we can wash the spheres away.
Freeman did not dignify my joke with a response. He radioed the pilot of the helicopter.
Power up!
On the other side of the clearing, the chopper's blades began to rotate.
Are we finished for the day?
One more thing!
Freeman opened a wooden crate that was about the size of a footlocker. Until that very moment, I had not noticed that particular crate. But now that I did not like the look of it. The symbol on the side of it was a black circle with three yellow triangles in it, the symbol used to mark radioactive materials.
Ray? That looks like a nuke.
Freeman said nothing as he opened the case.
Are you planning on nuking the spheres?
This is a dirty bomb.
That's great. But shouldn't we give burying the spheres another shot? I mean, that looked promising.
Sweetwater made it small. Just a half kiloton device with maximum radiation yield.
A dirty bomb. How nice. Well, as long as the radiation yield is high.
Freeman typed some code into the bomb, and 10 minutes appeared on the screen. The countdown began immediately. Freeman stood and headed toward the helicopter. I followed. We boarded the helicopter and left the clearing, circling 300 feet over the forest and nearly a mile away.
The trees around the clearing leaned out, swayed back toward the explosion, then caught on fire. They burned like matches in a book. A layer of smoke formed around the body of the steam shovel. When the smoke evaporated, it left a blackened hulk in its wake.
Guess we won't be going into that part of the forest anytime soon.
As the smoke and ash cleared away, I could see the spheres sparkling against the silver, black, and orange background that had once been filled with trees.
Nothing hurts them.
During duty hours, I played the role of the faithful lieutenant in the Marines. My second life was working with the science lab.
We've examined the data Raymond and Lieutenant Harris collected.
Sweetwater waddled across the laboratory floor.
Roll the feed.
On the 10-foot screen that hung from the ceiling, the Avatari mining operation appeared. The video feed started with what we saw the moment we entered the cavern, as captured by Ray Freeman's visor. I stood with my back to the camera, looking out at the spider things. As Freeman entered the cave, the camera panned around it, and there the feed froze, focusing on one of the spider things.
What the hell is that?
We think they're drone workers, General Glade. From what we can tell, they're not much more intelligent than a mechanical arm on an assembly line. They appear to follow a simple digging protocol and show no signs of initiative or independent thought. This is interesting.
Sweetwater waddled over to the screen.
See, here Lieutenant Harris comes within a few inches of that drone.
On the screen, I am walking down the path as one of the drones pops out of a hole and walks right past me.
A sentient being would have attacked Lieutenant Harris. Those sharp forelegs, it could have cut him in half.
Do we assume that they came to hollow out the mountain? Are they going to hollow the entire planet?
General Haight, the Army's new second-in-command, fidgeted impatiently.
We've run a computer analysis of this cavern. If our estimates are correct, the cavern is 41.3 miles long. Assuming the mountain was solid when the Avatari arrived, we estimate that they have displaced approximately 800 cubic miles of mountain per week. It's all hypothetical, of course.
Tall, slightly built, and obviously insecure, Breeze tended to decorate his speech with more scientific terms than Sweetwater.
800 miles per week, Dr. Breeze? That doesn't seem like much. I mean, at 800 miles per week, it could take them years to hollow out the planet.
They don't need to hollow out the planet. We think they're just trying to make enough space to hold their catalyst.
Breeze leaned over the projector.
William, perhaps we should show them the cave.
Good idea.
On the screen, the cave in which Freeman and I had found the spheres appeared. Freeman entered first and examined the spheres and the gas leaking out of them. He pulled out the meter Sweetwater gave him and held it over the mud-colored gas.
This is not the extreme hydrogenation elemental compound distillation that was found in other Avatari settlements, such as the Mogat homeworld and Hubble. The military term is distilled shit gas.
Oh, why didn't you say so?
Everybody knows about that.
Raymond ran a number of tests on the gas, and we've been able to make some educated guesses about its properties.
That's a gas? Looks like muddy water.
Oh, it's very dense. So dense, in fact, that it is on the border of the definition of both a gas and a liquid.
That's what those things are after? They just want that mud stuff?
Quite the opposite. That is what they are pouring into the planet. We think they are seeding the planet.
Sweetwater waddled over to Breeze and handed him a data chip to place in the projector. When the picture resumed, it showed the same map of the galaxy that Brocious showed me back on Mars.
We assume you are all familiar with this map. Arthur, can you close in on Hubble?
The screen switched to a close-up view of Hubble, the burned-out cinder of a planet on which a colony of Mogats tried to make a stand.
Would you display the pre-Nova image of the Templar system?
A moment later, the image of a very crowded solar system appeared. The system had three planets orbiting so close to its sun that the planets could not have been habitable. There was a fourth planet that had surface area covered by water, a fifth planet that resembled Earth, and seven more planets that looked too dark to provide productive habitation.
This is the Templar system. The fifth planet is about the same distance from its sun as the Earth is from Sol.
About 50,000 years ago, some event caused Templar to expand suddenly, then go supernova. Please understand, gentlemen, that 50,000 years is a very short amount of time in astronomical terms. In astronomy, we generally measure events by millions of years. In this case, a sun expanded and cooked everything around it in a matter of 50,000 years. As you can see, the first three planets in the system vanished entirely, but this planet...
He pointed to the fifth planet again.
This planet survived, after a fashion.
The screen now showed the familiar murky landscapes of Hubble.
We sent a military force to this planet a few years back and found that everything on it was made of the extreme hydrogenation elemental compound. That was not the only time we ever encountered that gas. Arthur, will you please show us the Mogats solar system?
The screen showed a new solar system. Like the Templar system, this one had gone dark.
This is the planet on which the Mogats built their home world. Their home world was nearly the exact same distance from its sun as Hubble was from Templar, as Earth is from Sol, as New Copenhagen is from Nigellus.
The generals remained silent. They stared at the screen, which once again showed the map with the Avatari movements across the galaxy.
We have come to the conclusion that the same solar positioning that makes planets productive for human habitation also makes them desirable to the Avatari. That would explain why they've only sleeved the planets we've colonized or planned to colonize.
Why would they pump distilled shit gas into a planet?
It's not shit gas. The stuff they're importing into New Copenhagen is something else that we think can be turned into shit gas. It's highly toxic. Direct contact with the gas would be fatal. A healthy man who breathed this gas would die in under a minute. A few traces of this gas seeped into Lieutenant Harris's helmet and left him with a second-degree burn.
Oh, the toxicity level from this gas is extreme. If you poured a single gallon of that gas into Valhalla Lake, you would contaminate the water. There would be a ratio of one part gas to 160 million parts water, and the water would be rendered unsalvageable.
From what the data tell us, this gas will expand exponentially when superheated. That is why we're more concerned about what the Avatari are doing with the sun than we are concerned about their work in the mountains.
To the sun?
Dr. Breeze?
I have not been able to experiment on the gas itself, of course, but from what I have been able to observe, this gas is a catalyst. Hypothetically, it has the ability to transmogrify everything around it into the same extreme hydrogenation elemental compound distillation found on Hubble and the Mogat homeworld. Of course, before it can do that, it must be superheated.
And how exactly do you expect the aliens to superheat the gas?
By causing the nearest star to supernova.
You think they're gonna blow up the sun?
They do not want to cause Nigellus to explode. They want to make it expand until it is large enough to incinerate New Copenhagen.
That is what they did to the stars in the Templar and Hadrian systems.
You're telling us that it's not going to make any difference if we beat these bastards or not. Our goose is still cooked?
As a worst-case scenario, yes, General Haight, that seems to be the case.
We're stuck on a planet with an alien army we can't kill. The sons of bitches are filling the mountains with enough toxic gas to poison the entire specking planet. Now you're telling us that they're getting ready to blow up the sun and incinerate the entire specking solar system. Sweetwater, you don't think this qualifies as a worst case scenario?
So it sounds like you're telling us that we're all gonna die.
They can't beat us in battle, so they're gonna fry the entire goddamn planet? Is this some sort of scorched earth thing? If they can't have the specking planet, they'll make sure it isn't good to anyone?
They don't appear to care whether we die or survive. If anything, we get the feeling that they would be happy to see us leave so they could get on with their work. The map they sent out, the one showing their movements? We've come to the conclusion that they're using the map as an eviction notice.
How very humane of them. What if we send a division into that pit and stop those bugs from digging?
Maybe we should nuke the bastards just for good measure. We have some nuclear devices back at our camp.
I recommend against using a nuclear device, and I caution you against any action involving their dig.
Oh, why is that?
Because it might cause the Avatari to step up the level of their attacks. We believe that the dig is their main operation. They haven't come here to kill us. We're like mice to them. As long as we stay out of their way, they won't stop what they're doing and fumigate. We theorize that the attacks on Valhalla are only a safeguard to prevent us from disturbing their excavation.
A safeguard? They killed 300,000 soldiers during their last attack!
We would hate to see what happened if they launched an all-out assault.
They destroyed our perimeter defenses!
And that attack came on the heels of our sending men to investigate their excavation.
You think we made things worse by sending in spies?
It had to be done!
It most certainly did. If Raymond and the lieutenant had not gone in, we would still be in the dark about their plans.
I thought you said those things were like robots. Didn't you say they were drones?
Most of the workers in the cavern were drones. There are larger creatures that seem to perform the role of a project foreman or a guard. We think the larger ones may be avatars instead of drones.
And they spotted Harris?
There is no question that they spotted Raymond and the lieutenant.
Well, that is just specking great.
And you think the Avatari upped their attack because of it?
It seems like a reasonable assumption. Of course, I'm a physicist, not a xenopsychologist.
Now we need to try a nuclear solution. We can place a nuke out there and let them deal with that.
We've tried it.
Tried what?
We deployed a small nuclear device. We had Raymond and Lieutenant Harris place a low-yield nuclear bomb beside the spheres. It didn't impact them.
You nuked them without telling us?
Look, General, we've tried burning them with fire, freezing them with liquid oxygen, corroding them with acid, distorting them with radio waves, and irradiating them with a small but dirty atomic device. Oh, and we tried burying one of their spheres under several tons of soil.
You buried it?
Raymond and the lieutenant took a steam shovel out there.
What happened when you buried it?
The soil falls through the sphere and is altered. Then, the sphere rises to the surface. We didn't seriously think it would destroy the sphere, but we wanted to see what would happen.
Maybe blowing up the mountain would slow their digging.
I'm not convinced it would have any effect. It won't stop the spheres from excreting more of that gas catalyst into the mountain.
Unless you gentlemen can figure out a way to destroy their spheres. They'll just keep on dumping gas.
Damn it! Stop telling us what we can't do! Give us something we can use! How do we fight these bastards?
We might have just what you need. At least we believe we're on the edge of a breakthrough.
What kind of breakthrough?
One of our teams is on the verge of decoding their technology. We may soon understand how they manipulate tachyons.
Are you telling me that we might be able to use the tachyons to attack them?
We think we may be able to block them from using tachyons.
What goddamn good is that?
If they cannot use the tachyons, they can't hurt us. They would come out of their spheres as energy, but without the tachyon shell forming around them, their energy bodies would simply evaporate.
How soon? How soon will you know?
Oh, it's still a week out, at the soonest.
A week? A week? We're down to fewer than 600,000 troops. We don't have any working rocket launchers. The wall around our outer perimeter is down. Do you have any idea what you're saying? Those Avatari bastards attack every 3 days. We're almost out of soldiers, and you want us to hold off for 2 more attacks?
General, every man we have is working around the clock. We need to run tests. It takes time to analyze the data and build off the results.
Whatever you think you can do, you get it done in 48 hours. You got that, Sweetwater?
Then make it yourself.
What? What did you say?
If you think you and your soldiers can decode an alien technology in 48 hours, by all means, do it.
Work faster.
General, we started with nothing. We didn't even have the technology to prove the existence of tachyons 2 weeks ago, and now we are developing a primitive method for controlling them. One of our teams is about to hijack an alien technology that is far more advanced than our own. It's a miracle we've gotten this far this fast.
And you expect us to protect your facility that entire time?
No, sir, not the entire week. Only when we're under attack.
Gentlemen, we have our orders. We need to hold out for another week.
Harris, we're moving camp.
Moffat met me as I entered the hotel.
Where are we headed?
The University of Valhalla. They want us settled in by 1900.
I checked my watch. It was 11:30. That seemed generous.
7.5 hours just to move racks?
We should be so lucky. Command wants this side of town fought pig ready by 0100 hours. We've got mines to plant and traps to wire.
What about the armory?
We're leaving it.
Everything? We've got nuclear bombs down there.
Yeah, I know. I asked Burton about that. He says our best bet is to stop the Mudders before they get here.
So, am I helping with the move or focking the pig?
You're supervising the move, then you're fucking the pig. Once we get everything loaded onto the truck here, I want you to take one full platoon to help the ACO work on a new DMZ.
In plain speak, he wanted me to take the company out to help the Army Corps of Engineers set up a new demilitarized zone.
Let me get my armor.
How's the shoulder?
Better.
I saluted and caught an elevator to my room.
You know, you guys don't need to guard me every speckin' minute of the day.
We were riding in a canvas-covered truck.
I'm not guarding you, Phillips. I'm protecting you.
I don't want to be protected.
I like keeping an eye on you, Phillips. You're entertaining. I've never watched anybody self-destruct before. It's kind of exciting.
Go spec yourself, Harris.
You are speaking to an officer?
Sorry. Go spec yourself, sir.
What happened to that famous Mark Phillips sense of humor?
I left it back at the hen house.
Not back on the battlefield?
He was screw up in the same orphanage as me.
Did you know him?
Are you speckin' kidding me? He was 23 years younger than me. I made corporal by the time he was 3.
I've read your record. You were probably busted back down to private again by the time he was 4.
I specked it all up, didn't I?
You mean at the hen house? Yeah, you specked up royally.
You don't get it, Harris.
I don't get what?
I don't give a rat's ass about Moffat or what he does. Let him shoot me. I don't give a shit. Thomer says I deserve it. That's what you think, too. I guess I deserve a good specking, but not because I boffed Moffat's wife. Hell, more guys have ridden her than the goddamn broadcast network. Not surprised she managed to work me into her busy schedule.
You're shitting me.
Would I shit you about something like that? I think she has a thing for clones. Half the men guarding the specking hen house had a role with her. I think Skittles might have. I was the only one who talked about it. He doesn't give a rat's ass who sleeps with the old girl. He's just mad because I didn't keep quiet about it.
Phillips unbuttoned his shirt and showed me his upper arm.
He's pissed about this.
He displayed the tattoo he'd had placed over the biceps on his right arm. It showed a naked woman, a modern Venus in a half shell, with one hand cupped over a breast and the other covering her pelvis. The banner around the picture said, "Lily Moffat, count me in."
Shit, Phillips. When did you get that?
I got this while I was at the hen house. It was her idea. Harris, she hates Moffat. She offered to pay for the damn tattoo.
Nice, Phillips. Very nice. How did Moffat hear about it?
The truck slowed to a stop. We had come to a busy stretch in which teams of soldiers dragged heavy carts across the 6-lane street. The other men jumped from the truck. Phillips stood to join them.
How did Moffat find out about the tattoo? Did she tell him about it?
Not likely. She had so many guys since me. Bet she doesn't even remember my name. He saw it when I showed up for morning calisthenics. I came in a tank top.
You what?
And I lined up front and center.
Were you trying to get yourself shot?
And I started doing arm curls while he was counting out jumping jacks.
You really do want to die, don't you?
You know what, Harris? I don't care what happens.
I let my friend go join the other men. There was no way both Phillips and Moffat would survive this war. Sooner or later, Moffat would find a way to kill Phillips, and Phillips would do nothing to protect himself, the stupid prick. There are a lot of ways to kill yourself. At least suicide by screwing was unique. The mine placer looked like an industrial vacuum cleaner. It had a 20-foot telescoping hose with ribbing for flexibility. You could have rolled a tennis ball down the length of the hose, but a baseball would not fit. The Corps of Engineers had painted foot-wide X's all along the street. Our job was to roll the mine placer to each location, press the nozzle over the axis of the X, and plant the mine. The mine placer literally shot the explosive right through asphalt or concrete. The blast both placed the mine and removed the painted X without cracking the pavement beneath. The only trace the mine placer left was a clean spot of road where the mine now sat. Around the grounds, soldiers and Marines placed traps of many descriptions. A team of soldiers strung hot wire fences. Once they finished the fence, they would hook it up to an electrical circuit, and 4,000 volts would surge through the wires. A fence like that could wipe out a whole platoon, but I doubted the Avatari would even notice it.
What do you think?
This should give us an edge.
The mines might slow them down.
It's gonna come down to a firefight again, isn't it?
There's a lot going on that I can't tell you about, Tomer.
It's bad?
Yeah, it's bad. General Glade sent an aide to retrieve me from the DMZ. I told the aide I was busy, and made him wait the entire afternoon before accompanying him to Glade's office. Glade had set up shop in the dean's office of an administrative building.
Everly says you were too busy to talk this afternoon.
I was laying mines.
I served under Bryce Kleiber for 14 years. Did you know that?
I did not know that, sir.
Just about every senior officer in the Navy or the Marines served under Kleiber at some time or another, Harris. If he liked you, you could count on a long and successful career. I was a captain when I reported for duty on the Grant. By the time they transferred me to Brocious's command in the Central Cygnus Fleet, I was a colonel. From captain to colonel in 14 years. You could say that's a good rate of promotion. I hear you spent a lot of time with Kleiber. The way I hear it, you were something of a son to him. As close to a son as he ever got, I suppose. He did create your kind. Me, Harris, I have three sons of my own. I'm not looking for a surrogate. As far as I'm concerned, you're a Marine who gets things done, and that earns you some leeway. You're efficient, I'll give you that, but you're not a real officer. Only natural-borns qualify as officers in my book, Lieutenant. You may be the last of your kind, but you are still a clone. Just a clone. You got that?
Yes, sir.
When I send an officer, a natural-born officer, to call you in, you will show him proper respect. Do you understand me? You will specking well drop what you are doing, whatever you are doing, and report. Do you read me, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
Why did it take Everly so specking long to get you this evening?
I stopped off for a sandwich.
Maybe I've been too lenient with you, Lieutenant.
There's no question about that, sir.
What the speck is that supposed to mean?
It means, sir, that I am ready to resign my commission. More than 400,000 clones have died out there without even knowing what they were up against. You don't like clones, sir, and I don't like the kind of anti-synthetic asshole natural-borns they make into officers. If you want my commission, you go right ahead and take it, sir. I don't care anymore.
If you are tired of command, I can have you busted down to private.
I wish you would. You might want to stand me in front of a firing squad while you're at it. The way things are going, General, you wouldn't even be shaving a week from my life.
What is the matter with you, Harris? Are you trying to get busted down?
General, every time we head into battle, I watch good men die thinking they're in a fair fight. You might not consider clones human.
You've got me wrong.
If you don't mind, sir, I would be happier as an enlisted man. I'm sick of running errands for you and the science lab.
General Glade sat staring at me.
But we need you.
The next time the Avatari came, we knew they were coming even before the first of their troops emerged from the spheres. Cameras hidden along the path showed the army of glowing specters as it trudged toward town. As always, they did not march in formation. By the time they reached the outer limits of Valhalla, the Avatari had begun to take on substance. Their brown-black shells were covered with cracks through which yellow light glowed. The features on their faces were flat and impassive. They did not search the area for traps as they walked through the ruins of the first suburb. By the time they reached the DMZ, the Avatari had become as solid as our tanks and bullets and weighed nearly 2,000 pounds, these walking statues of alien stone. Their weapons had already formed into chrome cylinders, and the light of the ion curtain reflected off the barrels of those guns like sunlight shining off mirrors. They entered the minefield. One of the Avatari marched straight into the electric fencing and pushed right through it. The alien Avatar paid no attention to the electrical air show as it trampled the fence and continued. The Army and Marines deployed every available man. With all of the casualties we'd taken, my company had compacted its three combat platoons into two, and now we sent our support platoon into battle as well. Other companies had fared worse than us. Some were down to a single platoon, and some platoons were down to a single squad. I watched the video feed of the Avatari entering the demilitarized zone from inside my helmet in a small window on my visor.
10 minutes to showtime.
Every man in the company heard Major Burton's announcement. but only commissioned officers had access to the video feed.
Harris, report!
The company is ready, sir.
The entire company was stationed in the hotel district, hidden in a park. It was a small park, no more than 5 or 6 acres. Monolithic skyscrapers surrounded us on every side. When I looked back over my shoulder, I could see the outline of the Hotel Valhalla against the sky. The only man not present was Lieutenant Moffat. He and several other company commanders sat in a conference several blocks away. I dug the men in along the crest of a hill. The ground in front of us was a marsh. I could see the still surface of the water through canes and reeds, plants that had gone dormant for the winter.
Lieutenant Harris, are you watching the feed?
Yes, sir.
From my perch on this hill, I could see far enough down the street to spot the Avatari. At this distance, I needed telescopic lenses to make them out, but I could see them tramping forward. Walking point, a yard or two ahead of its comrades, one of the Avatari stepped on a mine. With my visor zoomed in on the bastard, I enjoyed the carnage as much as I would have if I were only a couple of yards away. The explosion tore the alien's leg from the rest of its body, and it flew 20 feet through the air.
At least they're not mine-proof.
On the video feed, I could see that maybe as many as 100 Avatari had stepped on mines. The rest of their army paused and studied the field for a moment. This was the first time they had ever shown the slightest concern about their surroundings. An alien stepped forward, pointed its rifle at the street ahead, and fired. Watching the feed on the small window in my visor, I saw several other Avatari doing the same thing. I expected the rifle to fire a bolt of light into the street, but it fired a long string of light instead. Then the entire street vanished in a mass explosion. The cloud of dust, dirt, and smoke washed across the space between the buildings like a river breaking through a dam. It flooded the open ground of the park, then splashed into us and moved beyond.
What the hell was that?
The conscripts did not have access to the video feed, and they were in the dark about what was happening up the street.
Daddy, they detonated the mine. So we got them.
We stared straight ahead into the haze. Night for day vision made no difference. We might as well have been buried in mud.
Glad we worked so hard laying those mines, eh? Got any ideas on what to do next? What was that?
It must have detonated more mines.
Daddy?
Harris, take them out!
Moffat was ordering us to commit suicide. We had no idea what waited on the other side of that smoke.
Harris, attack! That is an order!
I said nothing. Anything more than 10 feet ahead of me was still a blur of dust and smoke. Standing in the park felt like swimming underwater. I could not see anything beyond the reeds in the pond at the base of the hill.
Harris, I gave you an order! Acknowledge!
Some of the dust had settled on the surface of the pond. It floated on the oil film.
Harris, I have given you a direct order. I order you to attack.
Why don't you get your natural-born ass down here and lead the attack yourself?
Watch yourself, Harris.
You want to send us in alone? You're sending a single company against 50,000 mutters?
Then something happened. There was a flash so bright that I could see it through the dust and smoke. I turned back in time to see another building folding in on itself.
Harris, this is your last warning. Get in there!
Without saying a word, I left the hill. I started back toward the hotels, toward the officer's sanctuary from which Moffat was issuing orders.
Lieutenant, where are you going?
I did not answer Tomer. I was beyond speaking.
Lieutenant Harris!
Harris, my counsel shows that you are moving away from the line! What the spec do you think you're doing? You and your men get your asses in there! That is an order!
Lieutenant Harris!
Tomer fell in behind me. So did the rest of the company. I stashed my particle beam pistol in my armor, a good weapon for killing Avatari, and pulled out my M27.
Lieutenant, what are you doing?
I'm going to help Lieutenant Moffat earn his combat pay.
A second building fell down in the background as I cut across the park. Moffat, a prick even by natural-born officer standards, wanted to sacrifice an entire company because he had a grudge against a single clone. Like the liberators before me, I had given in to bloodlust. I cared more about killing Moffat than killing the enemy.
Sergeant Phillips, take your men and return to the park!
Phillips ignored the order. He stayed behind me.
Harris, you are relieved of command! Phillips, you and your specking platoon get your specking asses out there! Do you specking hear me, Sergeant? I specking order you to specking engage the specking enemy! I order!
Phillips, What are you doing?
We're going where you go, Capitan.
Phillips! Phillips! Phillips, you speaking waste of DNA!
I don't need a damn posse.
We're not your damn posse, sir.
Tomer, hold your platoon!
Tomer did as he was told. Moffat issued the same command to Harrington, who also fell back. That was good. I did not want them in the middle of this.
Lieutenant Harris? Shut up, Tomer.
I holstered my M27. Whatever I did once I caught up to Moffat, I would do with my bare hands.
Harris, what the spake do you think you're doing?
Are we going to kill an officer? Is that what we're going to do? Get out of here. This is between me and Moffat. Bullshit. I'm the one who slept with his ugly-ass wife. This is my speckin' court-martial. Go kill a mutter.
Phillips did not listen. He and his platoon trailed after me, my unwanted entourage. Across the street, I saw dozens of officers huddling around a makeshift bunker. Moffat stood at the front of the pack. I saw his virtual tag. Name, Warren Moffat. Rank, 2nd Lieutenant. Serial number, 617-522-48013. He stood in the open, staring straight at me, his arms crossed before his chest.
Arrest that man!
Suddenly, a dozen guns pointed at me. Marines standing so close I could reach them with my elbows pointed guns into my chest. Marines standing a few feet away pointed guns at my head. As I started to come to my senses, the hammer struck. I felt the blow, knew it had knocked my helmet from my head. But that was all I knew, as I fell face first to the street. Since the UA Marines did not have a base on New Copenhagen before the war, they did not have a brig of their own. As he prepared for the Avatari invasion, General Glade commandeered a downtown police station to use as a holding pen for grunts who got drunk or caused problems. When I woke up, I found myself a guest of that facility. The dim lighting was a good thing, because my head felt like someone had used it for a soccer ball. I reached out and felt a cot just a few feet from where I lay on the cold floor. Using that cot like a crutch, I pulled myself up. I did not have my helmet. The MPs must have confiscated it as they dragged me down here. I did not have a gun, or a knife, or even my combat boots. I knew the war was still on outside. So be it. There was nothing I could do. I climbed onto the rack and lay there. I must have been down in that cell for hours. The 12-hour muscle relaxant I took from my shoulder wore off. That gave me some perspective about how long I had been down there. Lost in my thoughts, I did not notice when the vibrations stopped outside the station. They might have faded, or they might have stopped abruptly. At some point, I realized that I had no idea when the vibrations had ceased. No one came for me. Time ticked by slowly. At least I thought it passed slowly. I fell asleep. When I woke, I searched around the cell until I found the toilet that sat in the corner. I took a piss. I found the sink while I was on the head and washed my hands. I cupped my hands and took a drink. The water tasted rusty. The sink was small and shallow, but I thought it might be big enough for me to submerge my face and drown myself. The problem was, I would never be able to kill myself. The neural programming in Liberators did not allow us to commit suicide.
Harris, you in here?
I recognized the voice. Major Terry Burton came in with an entourage of officers and MPs.
Comfortable?
I could use some chow.
Don't mind us. By all means, go back to sleep if you like.
Did we win?
That depends on your definition of winning. I understand you tried to attack a fellow officer. Is there anything I need to know about before I let you out?
Is Moffat with you?
No.
Then I'll behave myself.
General Glade wants to see you. Apparently, he has something he wants to discuss with you.
My court-martial?
Nope. He wouldn't have bothered sending me if he planned on throwing you right back in.
Burton and his men cleared away from the door as I stepped out, acting as if I had a fatal disease.
Your things are in a box upstairs.
We took an elevator up 3 floors to the ground floor. One of the men in armor pointed to the box that held my holster and personal effects. I found my boots and body gear, but my helmet and weapons were gone.
My guns?
We'll hold the guns for safekeeping. You can have them back after your meeting with General Glade.
And my helmet?
evidence.
I thought you said there wasn't going to be a court-martial.
There's going to be an investigation. If it leads to a court-martial, I don't think the court-martial will be yours. Lieutenant Moffat claims you tried to kill him.
The thought occurred to me. Did he happen to mention why I wanted to kill him?
He says he was baffled by it.
Did you check the record in his helmet?
Funny thing about that, his helmet appears to have malfunctioned. The record got erased during the battle.
We walked to the front door and stopped.
Fair warning, Harris. Valhalla changed a bit while you were locked up.
Changed?
It was as if by opening the door, Major Burton had transported me from New Copenhagen to the cities of Dresden or Hiroshima after the Second World War. Instead of looking at a city, I was staring into a desert with slag instead of sand. Except for the litter and the ruins, the world outside the station looked primordial.
The battle was all but done by the time the Avatari reached this part of town.
How far are we from the demilitarized zone?
Harris, this is the city center. The demilitarized zone ends 8 miles away.
I was told I had time for a quick shower, and then I was to report to General Glade's office. So I followed orders. I walked straight through the barracks, heads turning as I passed.
Lieutenant Harris?
Sergeant Tomer came out to meet me.
Where were you? Harrington told me that Lieutenant Moffat threw you in the brig.
Is that what he said? I don't have much time. What did I miss? How's your platoon?
There are only 9 of us left in the platoon. They got Phillips.
Did you see what happened? Did Moffat shoot him?
No. I lost track of him in the battle.
Have you gone out after him?
No, sir. We've been confined to base.
Who gave the order?
Lieutenant Moffat.
Moffat again.
Now I wanted to look at Phillips' body more than ever. He would be dead, no question about that. But I needed to know what killed him.
The Mudders got Manning and Skittles. Bowl and Harrington made it. I never saw anything like it before. They just plowed through everything. They knocked down buildings whenever they came to anything more than a couple of stories tall. I hear the Army stationed a regiment in a parking garage. The Mudders knocked down the building and the Army lost the entire regiment. An entire regiment destroyed with one shot.
Tomer, take 5 men and find Phillips. His virtual tags will still be up unless he was shot in the head. Do you know where he took his platoon?
What about Lieutenant Moffat?
You just get your team together and head out. If you run into Moffat, tell him he can take it up with me directly.
Aye, aye, sir.
If you find anyone with a pulse, you bring them back. But Phillips is the one I want to see. Once you find him, head straight back to the barracks.
Tomer nodded and went out to piece together his hunting party. I finished my shower and dressed. Then I went to base command and reported in. I was led to Glade's office.
Lieutenant Harris?
I stood and saluted. He returned the salute.
We fought that whole damn battle for nothing yesterday. The science lab is useless.
Useless?
Burton didn't tell you?
Tell me what, sir?
Arthur Breeze is missing.
Missing? General, if there's one man on New Copenhagen who knows there's no place to run...
Not Breeze. He didn't run away. Sweetwater's the one who would have bolted. He's a coward.
So what happened?
All we know at this point is that Breeze stole a private plane. We don't know where he went with it.
Sweetwater doesn't know?
Apparently not.
You don't think much of Sweetwater.
No, I don't. The little runt ran out on Terrano.
Well, maybe he's more cut out to be a scientist than a soldier.
He'd better be, because he's all we have now. Lieutenant, I'm not sure how much Major Burton actually knows about the last attack.
He said it went badly, but he did not know any specifics.
Here are the specifics, Harris. The armory was destroyed. All our weapons, all our ammunition, buried. The Avatari destroyed the Hotel Valhalla. They just about cleaned out the army. Newcastle's down to about 20,000 men. I have less than 10,000 Marines. I think the entire New Copenhagen militia was wiped out. But General Hill still has all of his pilots for all of the good those grounded bastards do us. We lost it all protecting the speckin' scientists. Then Breeze just ups and runs. Why did we listen to them?
We didn't have any choice, sir.
No, we did not. General Newcastle wants to bring in any civilians old enough to carry a gun. There's no point in bringing in more bodies. Not with all of our guns buried under that hotel.
It doesn't sound like more bodies would make much of a difference.
They fought a completely different battle this time, Harris. Did Burton tell you that? Did he tell you that they attacked on 2 fronts?
There were 100,000 this time?
The same damned 50,000, but they attacked on 2 fronts. They sent half their men from the east side of town, and we didn't have a single platoon in place to meet them. Not a single speckin' platoon. They always came in from the west. Why did they have to pick this battle to start thinking strategies? 5 days ago, we had too many men and too many weapons, and we couldn't decide which one we wanted to throw away first. Now look at us.
Sir, what about the rocket launchers? Wasn't the army constructing them around campus?
Completed. The only problem is that we left the damned rockets in the armory for safekeeping. Do you know where that leaves us, Harris? That leaves us so far up Shit Creek we're practically to the kidneys.
Glade droned on about the battle, but I paid little attention. I felt like someone had drilled a hole in my head and poured thick oil into my brains. Thoughts came slowly. The world was coming to an end, and all I could do was hang on for the ride.
Come in!
Jim, we better get to the lab. The dwarf is waiting on us.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the briefing. We don't want to miss out on the latest bad news.
General Haight turned toward me and paused.
I heard you sat the last fight out, son.
I got thrown in the brig.
I heard that too. A firing squad would be too good for the bonehead who took you off the line.
The war did not reach the hallowed steps of the science laboratory. Not a window was cracked. Not a doorpost was nicked. Not so much as a blade of grass looked out of place on the lawn.
I suppose we should get started? We might as well begin with the good news.
Good news? There's good news?
Sweetwater pressed a button on a portable communications console.
This is Valhalla Station. Come in. Repeat. This is Valhalla Station. Come in.
Valhalla Station, this is UAN Thermopolis. We read you, Valhalla Station.
What was that?
We were able to make a hole in the ion curtain.
There are ships out there?
During the moment that we penetrated the curtain, we detected 6 battleships orbiting the planet.
Do we know if the Avatari have attacked Earth?
You've just heard everything we have.
That's it?
Newcastle shook his head, the disappointment showing on his face.
That is the good news. That you located 6 battleships orbiting the planet? They can't send down reinforcements. You weren't able to speak to them for more than a second, and you don't know if Earth even exists! That is the best news you have for us. We can't even call them back, and that's the good news?
No. The good news is that we believe we've cracked the Avatari's Tachyon-based technology. Give us a little more time and we can...
A little more time?
Of all people, this time it was mild-mannered General James Hill.
We are down to 35,000 troops. Did you know that? I am about to send highly trained pilots into ground battles. Ground battles! We have given you time and blood and everything else you have asked for. If you don't have anything now, then we're specked. We're really specked.
Do you or do you not have a weapon that we can use?
Arthur had an idea. That idea of his probably cost him his life.
God damn. We've lost. We've lost. Do you understand that? We're out of fighting solutions. So far, the only thing you have given us is 6 useless battleships. Gentlemen, the end of humanity came on our watch.
Arthur believed he found a way to stop the Avatari from assembling.
Stop them from assembling? I don't understand.
Tachyons are not like other kinds of particles. They do not bond together. They are in constant motion. We've never been able to prove their existence because they move faster than the speed of light, and we would need an incredible amount of energy to cause them to stop. It must take them even more energy to fuse them together, and that is why the Avatari degrades so quickly. It's not because you destroyed them, but because so much energy has leaked out. They no longer have much energy to keep the Tachyons fused.
Sweetwater typed something into a keyboard, and a video feed of the Avatari spheres appeared on a small screen near his seat. Near the spheres sat the dirty bomb Freeman had used to nuke the site. Sweetwater did not run the feed. He just left the image on the screen.
Raymond and Lieutenant Harris made an important discovery the first day that the Avatari landed. But we did not have enough data to realize what they had found.
Sweetwater held up a petri dish holding a layer of rust-colored dust.
This was once a bullet.
What did you do to it?
We didn't do anything to it in the lab. This was one of the bullets that Raymond fired through the light spheres. Something in the spheres coated the bullet, changing its chemical makeup. We initially thought it was some form of radiation. Then we found out about the gas Raymond and Lieutenant Harris discovered in the Avatari mines. Arthur, Dr. Breeze, checked the information Raymond gathered about the gas and compared it to this bullet to see if the gas might have caused the changes to this bullet, and found a match. It appears that the spheres are made out of that gas. They're like a bubble of gas. Now, watch this.
Sweetwater started the video feed. The dirty bomb exploded. I relived all of the disturbing images on the screen. The Holocaust, the flash that looked like a golden jellyfish as it rose in the air. Sweetwater froze the image before the firestorm reformed itself into a mushroom cloud. Sweetwater pointed to one of the spheres with his pen.
It's getting darker. The bomb made it weaker.
That was what we assumed, too.
As wind pushed and tore the forest, and the flash fire turned trees to ash, the spheres went dark. Then came the smoke, and the spheres vanished entirely. By the time that the smoke cleared, the spheres were as bright as before, but considerably smaller. I had not noticed it at the time because I had been so focused on the explosion and its apparent failure. Now, in the recording, I saw that the spheres could not have been even a full yard in diameter. And there was something else, too. Shit gas. A layer of shit gas covered the ground. Now, viewing everything magnified and in slow motion, I saw that the shit gas formed a layer under the smoke.
The nuclear explosion had a much greater effect than we initially thought. After careful analysis, Dr. Breeze discovered that the spheres had not become darker. They had become coated with tachyons. The bomb both heated or irradiated the gas in the spheres, charging it so that it temporarily attracted tachyons.
Do you know if it was the heat or the radiation?
No, we don't know, but we will only need to run a few quick tests to find out. Once we know, we should be able to adjust the next explosion to maximize its impact.
But how does this help us?
When the Avatari emerge from their spheres, they attract tachyons and bond them together the same way this bomb attracted the tachyons to the sphere. The Avatari bodies are composed of supercharged gas, which attracts tachyons like a magnet.
If we supercharge a larger source of the gas.
Like the gas in the mines.
That radio message we picked up from the Thermopolis was received 20 seconds after Raymond and the lieutenant ran the nuclear test. By charging the spheres, they were able to poke a hole in the ion curtain.
So you're saying that if we charge the gas in the mines, we can get out of here?
No. First of all, gentlemen, understand that we are discussing an extreme amount of energy. If we could tap the energy it takes to create one Avatari soldier, we might have enough power to run a small city for a year. Assuming we can generate enough energy and we can take that energy to a large enough source of the gas, we might be able to attract the tachyons before they attach themselves to the Avatari. That was what Breeze believed, and it appears he was right all along.
How does that help us?
Because without the tachyons to create bodies and weapons, the Avatari aren't much of a threat.
If it works, the next time the Avatari emerge, they will remain in their pure form, as will their weapons. Without tachyons forming a protective shell around their core, they should dissipate into the atmosphere in a matter of minutes.
In simple terms?
It's as simple as this. The Avatari, as we see them, are an energy impulse made solid by a layer of tachyons. If Arthur was right, we can block the tachyons from attaching themselves to the Avatari by attracting them to a larger source of supercharged gas, the caves. The key is creating enough energy to attract tachyons.
So we need to break into the alien mines and detonate a device like the one you used on the spheres?
We're going to need something a great deal bigger than that little half-kiloton bomb we sent Raymond and the lieutenant to explode. According to our calculations, we're going to need, at minimum, a 25-megaton explosion in their caves. We assume you have a device that size?
That, Doctor, is going to be a problem. The Avatari just demolished our armory. We had nuclear weapons, but they're all buried now.
Well, that does present a problem.
Sweetwater turned to me.
Raymond will be back in half an hour. Do you think the two of you could dig out one of those bombs?
What's the point? If we stop the aliens from coming back, we're still gonna fry.
You know what, General Haight? Given a choice, I think I'd rather die in battle than get fried by an overheated sun.
Hear, hear.
General Hill patted Glade on the back.
The sun? The supernova? Gentlemen, I should have been more explicit from the start. We've learned a great deal about how the Avatari create a supernova by studying the reaction they caused in the Templar system. If the Avatari were to begin working on Nigellus, it would be at least 20,000 years before it began to supernova, and another 10,000 before it incinerated this planet.
Excuse me?
20,000 years.
20,000 years? You made it sound like it would happen immediately.
I believe it was Dr. Breeze who discussed it with you. This is more his area of expertise.
What are you saying about 20,000 years?
I understood what Arthur meant. It never occurred to me that... Well... The destruction of the sun in the Templar system took place over a 50,000-year period. We've documented the entire cycle by observing it from the different locations across the galaxy. From the far end of the galaxy, 100,000 light-years from Templar, the solar system is unchanged. From approximately 80,000 light-years away, we can detect slight variations in the size of the sun.
So much for the goose getting cooked.
For the immediate future. I suppose you are correct, but they are still saturating the planet with a highly toxic gas. The atmosphere is already permeated. If they continue pouring gas into this planet, we will die.
Freeman liberated the Jeep when he got back to Valhalla, and we drove through the graveyard that had once been the capital city of New Copenhagen.
You missed all the action. I heard that Dr. Breeze is missing.
I found him.
Maybe that's a good omen.
He's dead.
Oh.
In the distance, I could see that the engineers had cleared the rubble and debris from the entrance to the garage. The arch of the garage opened like a man-made cave with a road vanishing into its darkened maw. From here, the whole thing looked untouched, except that there was supposed to be a luxury hotel on top of it.
So, do you like spelunking? At least there aren't any giant spiders mining the garage.
Just a couple of nuclear bombs.
The ramp entered the garage as a four-lane highway, then, just after the ticket booths, it narrowed to two lanes of traffic as it dropped toward lower levels at an acute angle. Beyond the booths, the light from the ion curtain faded, and I switched on a flashlight. Standing a few feet behind me, Freeman switched on the torch he had brought. The ramp spiraled down about 20 feet, then spilled into the first level of the garage, a cavernous expanse that once had been as wide as the hotel itself. It wasn't anymore, though. A solid wall of debris rose from the floor to the ceiling.
Dead end.
Ahead of us, little bubbles of light marked the places where engineers were conducting stress tests on caved-in areas.
I bet they could dig this whole thing out.
They had a month.
So we find another way in. Maybe we can tunnel our way in from outside.
I saw a trace of red mixed in with the concrete and rubble and went to have a closer look. From a distance, it looked like it might have been blood, but it was dry. When I shined my flashlight on it, I saw that it was a wedge of the red carpet that had once covered the lobby. I saw a metal bar sticking out of a mound of cement chunks and pulled on it. A small avalanche cascaded down the pile of debris covering the bar.
We're not getting in through here.
Freeman drove me to the dormitory, then went on to the science lab. He said he would pick me up when the engineers found a way into the garage. Tomer met me as I entered the dormitory.
We found Phillips.
You brought him back with you?
We did.
Let's go have a look.
He led me to a little parking lot behind the dorm. A single Jeep sat in the lot, which was ringed by 3-foot snowdrifts with surprisingly clean snow. We approached the Jeep. Tomer had laid Phillips out in the back of the Jeep, curling his knees against his chest so that he would fit. He'd left Phillips covered under an army blanket. I pulled back the blanket. The indomitable Sergeant Phillips had finally been beaten down. What remained was a body lying on its side in muddy combat armor. Had he been shot with a particle beam weapon, his armor would have been in splinters or entirely gone.
Where was he hit?
Shot through the chest.
The wound was 3 inches across and ran right through the center of Phillips' chest. Except for the trail of white where his armor melted and drooled into the wound, the hole was clean. The work of an Avatari bolt.
It doesn't matter who fired the shot. Moffat killed him.
Yes, he did.
Phillips knew this was coming. This is what he wanted to happen.
I suppose.
The moment they carted you away, Moffat sent Phillips' platoon back out to the enemy line. I'll shoot that bastard if I get a shot at him.
I'll shoot that bastard if I get a shot at him? The neural programming hardwired into Tomer's brain should not have allowed him to think such thoughts, let alone say them. I did not know what to say. I went back into the dorms, wondering how things had become so undone. A few hours passed before the engineers cleared out enough of the garage for Freeman and me to attempt an entry. An hour before the garage was ready, Freeman called to tell me I was on deck.
Aren't we both on deck?
You're on deck.
Where are you going?
I need to find Breeze.
I thought you said he was dead.
Sweetwater needs the equipment he had on him.
Where is he?
The Avatari mines.
You're going into the mines?
Only the entrance. Breeze didn't make it very far.
While Newcastle's engineers finished their stress tests, Sergeant Harrington located a staff car and picked me up in front of the barracks.
Where to, sir?
The hotel.
The Hotel Valhalla? The Mudder smashed it, sir. They knocked that place flat.
We're excavating the armory.
We aren't going to beat the Mudders, are we, sir?
Sure we can win. The science lab has some ideas that could turn this thing around.
So there's a chance?
We're Marines. There's always a fighting chance.
I'm not fishing for answers, sir. But have you talked to Tomer lately?
Should we talk about something in particular?
He's pretty upset about Phillips.
They were best friends.
Tomer blames Lieutenant Moffat.
So do I.
I'm worried he wants to go after the lieutenant.
Not Tomer. I don't think he has it in him.
I've known Kelly for a while. He's not a big talker. If he's talking about getting even, I'd take it seriously, sir.
It won't happen. Tomer won't kill Moffat. I'm sure of it.
What makes you so sure?
Tomer's a clone. He can't murder a superior officer. It's not in his programming.
Lieutenant, I grew up in an orphanage. I don't know if you knew that, sir. I grew up around clones, and I'm here to tell you that I'm seeing them do a lot of things these days that go against their programming. It makes me nervous.
Yeah, me too.